Bring the Vegas gaming experience to the palm of your hand. Bet your favorite team, try your luck in the casino or our poker room. The earliest sports lines and the biggest limits online. Lots of deposit options. Bet on live events as they happen. The next play, the next score. Get winnings fast or roll them into a parlay and win even more. Visit BetOnline today and see what millions of customers have experienced for over 20 years.
On third and three, they protect Brady. Scans the field and lets it fly. It's Evans. It's a touchdown.
This is the Big Nasty. Yeah, Big Nasty. Hall of Fame Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan, baby.
This is Mike Allstott, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and you're listening to the Cannon Fire Podcast.
Cannon Fire Podcast, brother. You ain't listening, and you're missing out. Woo!
And there the cannons go.
Cannon.
Fire them. Keep on firing them. Keep on firing them.
Hello and welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new edition of the Cannon Fire Podcast. I am your host, as always, Rhett Matthew, joined alongside me, my good buddy and co-host, the Philly Bucks fan himself from BucksNation.com, Mr. Evan Wanish, coming to you live on YouTube for what feels like the first time in a minute. We are breaking down last night's preseason game between the Miami Dolphins and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a losing effort for Tampa Bay, 26-24, but I'll tell you, outside of the game itself, we've got a lot of great things to talk about. Plenty of players showed up who needed to. And I'm really excited to get into this one, not only because we are talking about Buccaneers football once again, but I mean, it just moves forward a lot of the storylines from camp. It's exactly what these preseason games are here to do. And it's also an official sign that Buccaneers football is back. So, Evan, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing quite well on this Sunday. I was going to say morning, but I guess it's afternoon now. I'm doing quite well. There's finally some actual action to talk about, so looking forward to that.
So I know that we normally save the kicking battle for last, but we got to talk about the ending of this game because it's the day after. It's the morning after, if you will. Most people know how the game ended. 26-24, your final score. And we'll talk about the drive from Kyle Trask here in a minute, but Jose Borgalis makes a 55-yarder earlier in the night, and Rondé Barber was really putting him over in the booth up there, saying he probably could have made it from 70. I really think he's got that range, and by no means do I disagree. Like, it looked like it was good by a good bit. But, I mean, what should have been a chip shot to seal the game, make it 27-26. Put the Bucks on top, leave everybody feeling happy. From what, 43 yards, I think?
49.
Okay,
not a chip shot.
Not a chip shot by any means, but we talk a whole lot about this kid's range, and I mean, this is the worst kick we have ever seen from him. I know sample size is obviously important, but if there's one thing we know after this preseason game right now is that the kicking job is certainly Ryan Succop's to lose. At least that's my opinion, because I mean, I know that these preseason kicks are so important, and we've talked before about how they hold a lot more weight compared to how you do in camp. It's a stadium full of people. The pressure was definitely on. He was iced. You know, Miami calls the timeout. He makes the first one, misses the second one. I'm not trying to blow up or anything over it, but it's an inexperienced kicker kind of showing his true self there a little bit. Like, I think he was feeling good going into that, and, you know, 9 times out of 10, I think 49 yards, even with that distance, if you put Ryan Succop there, I feel like he makes that kick.
Does Ryan Succop make a 55-yarder?
I don't know. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe. I'd say it's a 50-50 shot. I don't think he's going to make it in the fashion that Borgalis did that one earlier in the game, though. That's for damn sure.
Here's the thing. One, I'm not so James Hill, we all know him. I don't know if we love him, but we all know him. He has said, like, he thinks that, you know, that pretty much, like, ends it, right? Like, Jose Borgalis missed that kick. That was his opportunity to really surpass Ryan Succop, and he couldn't do it. So Succop will likely win the job. And I'm sure you've heard this from me before. I couldn't disagree more with him. It's not over. Why are we just completely ignoring the 3 extra points he made and the 55-yarder? Like, why are we just like completely discounting that just because of one kick that was just badly hit and it still hit the post? I know it's not like
That
the
is
worst
true.
kick you've
It
ever seen.
looked bad coming out though.
Yeah. It was hit wrong.
It
He hit
was
it wrong.
right. I mean, you hit it wrong, it comes out, and when I was watching it, my first reaction was ouch. Like I literally was, I was feeling good. I felt like they were about to walk off and win this thing, and then that kick came out and it was what it was. I'm not, by no means am I saying that this kicking battle is over, but I think the biggest takeaway I have after that first game is that it is still Ryan Succop's job to lose at this point. Like, it's not over. It's not over, but if
I
Succop
think
keeps
it.
kicking ass, I cannot see a situation where the Bucks kind of,
I
stick their
just
leg
think
out for Borgalis.
with how Borgalis played, if they choose Ryan Succop, then Jose Borgalis will never be their kicker. Like, this is their one
That's
opportunity
fair
because
enough.
somebody else is going to pick him up because he was good last night. One kick does not define you. I understand it was in a big moment, but a 49-yard is not a chip shot. It's not a gimme. It was just hit wrong. He made the practice one. I still say that whenever a kicker gets iced, you should never, ever make the practice kick. You shouldn't even attempt it. There's no reason to attempt it.
That's like a universal superstition. Like I've admitted before that I get superstitious when it comes to sports, but I think 90% of Bucks fans can agree that you do not take that ice kick. You don't do it.
Well, just ask Cody Parkey, the Bears kicker from that Bears Eagles game. He made the practice kick. They iced him. He made the practice kick, and then the double doink happened. So you don't do the practice kick. But I thought Borgalis was good. You would obviously like to see him make it, like duh. But I don't think this kicking battle is over. From the sounds of it sounds like Ryan Succop is going to get most of the kicks next week in Tennessee. But they still have practices. They still have two more games. And I don't think this is the last you've seen of Borgalis kicking. I don't think, like, oh, Succop's going to kick versus Tennessee and then he's going to kick versus Indianapolis. I think you're going to see probably Succop versus Tennessee. And then I think you'll see both versus Indianapolis. I don't think this is over. I do think Ryan Succop has the upper hand. I thought Ryan Succop had the upper hand going into this game just because he was the veteran. We talked about that. He was the veteran player, and if all things were equal, they were going to go with that veteran. I will say I have a lot of confidence in Jose Borgalis from 50 plus. I have like zero confidence from Ryan Succop from 50 plus. Could it happen? Sure, but am I confident in it? No, I'm really not. He doesn't have the leg. Anything overly, I mean, I think his long in a Bucks uniform might be 52, I think. And I think he's only attempted that maybe once or twice. The other times that he's attempted it, he's missed it. But it's not over. However, you would have liked to seen him make that kick. I think even if he made the kick, you can't say, well, Borgalis won the job. Bye bye, suck up. Like, I don't think that's the case
Yeah,
either.
no, I don't think that's the case either. And by no means do I want to give the impression, I think I've said this a few times, but like I don't want to give the impression that this is over. I think that's just the biggest.
Unlike some other Buccaneers YouTube
I
guy.
just when I come out of this game and I look at Jose Borgalis, it's one of those things where like when it happens in the preseason, all you can really do is laugh at it. But let's say the Bucks carry Borgalis into the regular season. He wins the job. And like week two against New Orleans. Oh my God, could you imagine? Week two against New Orleans. They're on the road. 26-24 is your score. Here comes Jose Borgalis from 49 yards out. Hits the right upright. No good. Bucks fall to 1-1 because we both got him beating Dallas, I think. But
Season prediction show, little
if
spoiler.
that happens during the regular season and Jose Borgalis is your kicker, not only is the hindsight is 2020 people going to kind of, oh, Ryan Succop, blah, 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 because it's going to neither be near nor there once that time comes in the season. But like if that happens in the regular season, that would be 110% worse than the Matt Gay thing back in 2019. Like it would, you want to talk about fans turning on a guy, even if Borgalis was perfect the rest of the season. And the Bucks still made the playoffs and went on a deep playoff run, might even win a damn Super Bowl. Like, people still would not forget that.
He's a good kicker. That's the thing. Like, people were excusing Matt Gay and excusing Roberto Aguayo for missed kicks all the time. oh, you know, they're rookies, they're inexperienced, you know, oh, that's just jitters, I'll get it out, just, you know, just got to do adjust some things, they'll get it together. But now Jose Borgalis misses one kick, and all of a sudden it's, you know, terrible. Like, it, and I'm not saying you're saying that. It's just what I've been seeing a little bit on social media, and I get it. It's the overreaction of social media. Like, that's sort of how those things work. But to sort of wrap up the kicking stuff here, yeah, it's not over. I was more encouraged by what I, and this is going to be a theme for today, I was more encouraged by what I saw from Jose Borgalis than discouraged. That last kick does not sway me in any way. I still think he is the better potential of the two. I think, you know, Ryan Suggup's the safer option, but I think if you want to go with the higher ceiling, like, I think Borgalis could be the better kicker. But it's also the riskier option because of that inexperience factor.
Yeah, obviously we got a lot more time to figure this out, but I'm excited to see a scenario. I don't know if we'll see it in a preseason game, but I mean, they found some time to try it with Bradley Pinion last year where they trotted him out on the field and he tried like a 64-yard field goal for some reason. I'd like to see them in a position before the end of the preseason is over to do something like that with Borgalis in particular. Like, I know you're not going to trot out Ryan Suckup from the 50-yard line and feel confident about what's about to happen, but with that first field goal he made from 50-plus and it just sailed, I mean, I know it was close. It could have dinged the upright, but, I mean, from 50-plus yards, when it's in, it's in. It's kind of one of those things, too. But
oh, and also, Ryan Suckup is not yet kicked in a game situation either.
Yeah.
So what happens if Ryan Suckup misses a 45-yard field goal next week? Do things become even again now? Like, you know, is it Jose Borgalis?
Sure, yeah. I mean, listen, if you look at another week of camp that goes by, and these guys are both damn near perfect in the kicking period, and then you go into that second preseason game and Suckup goes 3 for 4, and he misses one from like 40-something yards, then absolutely, I think this is at the same level it was headed into the first week against Miami.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll be interesting to see, and it's an exciting battle. I think it's going to come down to that last week in Indy. I really do. I don't think the Bucs are decided yet. I think they really like both of them. I think they pretty much know that they can't. I would be shocked if they'd be able to keep Jose Borgalis on our practice squad for another year. I would be shocked.
No, I agree.
I think that's an ideal situation.
Chris Myers.
You have Borgalis there. Sorry to cut you off.
No, you're good.
The kicking stuff, man. This is serious stuff.
This is the business. Riveting content. That's why it's opening up the show this week.
Serious business. shout out Robert Green. If you're listening, give us a
our buddy, out, our buddy outside, yeah. Leverage. Hashtag pay attention.
Yeah, you got to. And people should be paying attention to this kicking battle. I think they finally are. But yeah, it's I think that I'm excited to see more of Borgalis. The thing is, they don't really practice much this week besides pretty much two joint practices with the Titans, so it'll be limited. But like, Borgalis went, technically he went 4 for 5. Like, technically he made 3 extra points, made the field goal, and missed another one. Like, technically he went 4 for 5. So.
And if you hear about him missing a 49-yarder at camp, nobody's kind of burning the place down either.
No, but I mean, I understand the situation, and the situation matters. Like, I think, especially when it comes to kicking, like, that matters. But yeah, I'm not ready to declare this over just yet, and I don't think the Bucs are either. I think the ideal situation, sorry, is Borgalis being on the practice squad one more year and then taking over next year. But if he's making 55 yarders, some NFL team's going to be paying attention to that.
Oh, yeah, 100%. That's what we've been saying all offseason long, is that if this guy is on the practice squad, he's not going to last an entire season. But let's talk about the rest of the game. Want to talk about the quarterback. Before we get into that, though, we are live, so let's check in with the live chat. Our buddy Nestor says, good morning. Killa Cali Buck says, what's going on, fellas? Lots of positives in the unfortunate loss last night. Nothing says Tampa Trask looking pretty good. Super dimensional. Gabbert looked way more composed than Kyle Trask did. Said he looked trash. We'll talk about the quarterbacks here in a second. Pete Payne, the moderator from UK, checking in. Kevin 522 also here, says, what's up, guys? Hope all is well. It was great to finally see some game action with the Bucks again. And if we got a pet peeve on something, I wish they didn't go white on white for their first home game in 7 months. Like, at the very least, if you're going to go white jerseys, go pewter pants. I feel like that's kind of the standard we've set now, but it's all right. I'm just complaining.
I feel like
at this
that's
point.
A preseason staple, kind of.
It has to be, right? Like that? Well,
I just feel like every team, like, I saw, like, the Eagles were home. They wore white on white.
Yeah, the Bucks are no strangers to wearing white on white at home. Like, 2010, they wore that combo at home more than anything else.
Well, especially in the preseason. Like, it's technically still the summer. So, like, yeah, it would have been cool. The preseason, there's always time to experiment. So they did red jerseys, white pants last year. I still am hoping for pewter jerseys and white pants. One quick note of why I don't think you're gonna get that, though, is because of the orange that's in the pants.
Yeah, there's no orange at all in the pewter.
Yeah, so it wouldn't look right.
Yeah. Really quick, Kevin, our buddy Kevin says, just give the people what they want. Put Vita a kicker. There you go. That solves all the problems here. But let's get into the game. Let's talk about the quarterbacks first. The Blaine train is who opened things up. We got a couple of drives with him. Found the end zone. Jalen Darden, touchdown from, 22 yards out?
About 20 yards or so, yeah.
So something that other people had noticed, I know they were talking about this on the Pewter Report podcast as well, is that on that Jalen Darden touchdown, Scotty Miller was even more wide open than Jalen Darden was. He kind of had options there, but I wanted to talk to you really quickly, not so much about the gain from Blaine Gabbert, but from Scotty Miller in particular and the rest of this wide receiver room, because the depth was certainly on display last night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jalen Darden was relatively quiet besides that one play, but that play is going to stand out, right? That play is going to definitely leave an impression, especially when I still think what was interesting to me was that Darden wasn't really getting many returns. He wasn't, I don't think any, like, I don't believe he returned any kicks. It was a lot of Rashad White. It was a lot of Kenyon Barner. And I believe Kalen Geiger was returning some punts as well. So that was interesting that he wasn't really doing it. And it may have been that they didn't want to risk an injury or anything. But yeah, I thought he looked good. Obviously, I'm going to discuss Tyler Johnson. I think that was pretty clearly the best receiver of the day.
Led the team in receiving, if I'm not mistaken.
Had 6 catches for 73 yards, long of 22 yards.
One drop that I know of, but
yes,
kind of easy to
shake
that off.
Yeah, he had one drop. So I thought he looked really good. He made that one contested catch on that throw from Gabbert on the touchdown drive. And also something that stood out to me, that not something he's done really in the past, he was able to break a few tackles every now and then and get some yards after the catch. And that's something I think if he's able to add that to his game, that'll give him a significant edge. And right now, not really his fault, but Breshad Perriman wasn't playing with an injury. You have to imagine that Tyler Johnson is ahead of Perriman in that wide receiver depth chart. Scotty Miller was pretty quiet. I know he was wide open on that play. Gabbert just decided to throw the ball elsewhere. That's not Miller's fault. I would think that Tyler Johnson is ahead of Miller as well. And if he keeps that up, Tyler Johnson will make the team. We talked about how it was critical for him to have a good camp, have a good preseason. This is pretty much the perfect start. We talked about how he was really good in camp. And then you said, the joint practice that I was at, he was kind of quiet. And I was like, that's been the issue with him. Whenever there's actual competition, he has struggled. But last night, he looked really good. So let's see if he can continue that. Because if he can, there's a good shot that he makes the roster.
As far as the rest of the wide receiver room goes, Kalen Geiger had a pretty good night. 4 receptions for 52 yards. Is it Jarrett Stearns?
Jareth.
Yeah, Jareth. I was thinking it was Jared, but then I had also heard Jareth. So Jareth Stearns, 4 receptions for 51 yards, had a touchdown. And that touchdown on the receiving end from Kyle Trask, I think the best pass I've ever seen him complete in a Buccaneers uniform. It was nice.
Yeah, the fantastic grab as well. Really a concentration catch. I liked what I saw from Stearns. I think obviously going to be tough for him to make the roster. That's not his fault. It's kind of the nature of the beast of what the Bucks have. But I think he's a prime him and Geiger could be two pretty prime candidates for a practice squad spots. So we'll see, but I think those two guys are two pretty good candidates for a practice squad spot because of what they can show, as you saw last night.
Yeah, the major question starts to become, like, even if the Bucks carry seven wide receivers, these are still guys who would be regarded as on that bubble. So if they can find a way to make the practice squad, that would be great. But a good feeling for Bucks fans last night, because you really can't say enough about the receivers who kind of showed up when I wasn't expecting them to show up. Jarris Stearns was a stud for a little bit.
Yeah, Stearns has flashed during camp a little. Kalen Geiger impressed me on the one first day I was there. He impressed me. He made a few nice plays. I thought it was overall, just by all the receivers, you had, I think Geiger and Stearns were playing most of the second half. Johnson didn't play too much in the second half, but pretty encouraged by what you saw. And this team's wide receiver depth, I mean, it could just be, they're going to have to say goodbye to some pretty good receivers in a few weeks. So it's going to be tough, but I saw this brought up on Twitter. I wonder if they would maybe look to trade one of them for, sixth or seventh round pick. As we have a $2 super chat by Lummy G. Is that your guy?
Yeah, that's my buddy. Actually, one of my coworkers, Warren Garrison, Lummy, if you will, from the Bubba the Love Sponge show. Says, hey, you. Thanks, Lummy. We truly appreciate your support. Glad to have you watching today. He's trying to get me to do work on my day off. That's why he's throwing me some money on the backside.
So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. I'm interested to see more of those guys. I'm interested to see, what guys like Tyler Johnson, Jarris Stearns, what can those guys, what can they do? Continue to do, because it's good. It's definitely good, but man, the Bucks are gonna have some pretty tough decisions here coming up.
Let's talk about back to the quarterback room. We mentioned the Blaine train, but he certainly went out there and did his thing. 5 for 5, 56 yards and a touchdown. His night was over after that. So here is the man of the hour. The title of the show today. The game from Florida Gator, second round draft pick, Kyle Trask, a guy who came into this game needing to show everybody a little bit of something, and that's exactly what he did. His stat line for the night, 25 for 33, 258 yards, a touchdown, an interception, and a fumble. Now, you're going to look at those two turnovers in the box score and probably have an opinion about that, but like, we can both agree they were kind of fluky. Like the interception in particular, it's give and take, in my opinion. Like, I can appreciate that he was trying to extend the play and find an open wide receiver, but it's also the risk that you're going to take by doing that. Like, some people say he could have just taken the sack. Mm-hmm. And then the fumble as well was kind of weird. I felt like that was eventually going to be whistled an incomplete pass. Just wasn't the case, and it is what it is. But what did you think of Kyle Trask's night? He showed us a lot of really good things, and then we'll talk about that last drive of the game here in a second too. But I was thoroughly impressed, and we talked about this guy needing to show improvement, and that's exactly what he showed us.
Yeah, on the two turnovers, that interception, while it was weird, it was definitely a weird interception. In the future, just take the sack. Just go down. Even if Rashad White catches that ball, he's getting tackled immediately for probably a loss of like two or three. So just take the sack at that point. Don't risk another player getting hurt or, injured or something. The fumble, that's a combination on the quarterback and the offensive line. I think any fumble like that it's not just on one guy. And I still think that his processing was a little slow. That's my one complaint. However, he showed a lot of, on his throws, a lot of anticipation, the timing and the rhythm. You can tell the receivers that he has chemistry with, because a lot of them were timing routes, especially on that last drive, which we'll get into. But we mentioned earlier, the touchdown pass to Stearns was like right over the shoulder of the defender. It was perfectly placed. Really only Stearns could get it. Stearns made a nice catch, but it was a really nice throw as well. Mikey says Trask was okay. Still think Gabbert is a lock for QB2. Well, we talked about that. No matter what Trask does, Gabbert is going to be the second quarterback on the depth chart. That's not going to change. Like, don't be discouraged by that. Because Gabbert is, if Tom Brady goes down, Gabbert's going to be the guy going in. Yes. Like, no matter if Kyle Trask outplays Gabbert this entire preseason or not. We talked about that a lot, that it's always going to be Gabbert. Yeah, I thought he was good. I was encouraged by what I saw. We talked about needing to see progress. Now, I will say, you know, what you see from a defense in the preseason is pretty basic. So I'm curious to see him again against Tennessee next week. I'm hoping he can go repeat, right? You know, do it again. Because what he showed on Saturday night was promising. He needs to find that consistency. And he just, like I said, needs to process things a little bit quicker. He was a little slow on some of his releases. I feel like if he just got rid of the ball just a second earlier, you maybe could have had, you know, instead of the guy being tackled right away, he could have ran for an extra 3 or 4 yards. So I think that and the interception, kind of the same deal. Even the fumble held onto it a little bit, but overall, I mean, it's hard not to come out of this game and be more encouraged, because you saw like that's a better player this year than what we saw last year. Like that's a better player, despite what we hear in practice. You know, that's a better player.
I think some important context here that might get overlooked when people look back at this game in the long run is those two turnovers. It wasn't just two turnovers. It was two turnovers in like three plays. Like it was, you know what I mean? It was very quickly a comfortable game for the Bucks, and then all of a sudden it wasn't. They were behind. They were trailing, kind of had to get back into the game. I think it was
two touchdowns in the span of 29 seconds.
Yeah, and it was eventually it turned up being 20 unanswered points for Miami, and the Bucks had to kind of get back into the game. But, I mean, two turnovers in three plays is enough to get any quarterback in the NFL rattled. And for a guy like Kyle Trask, I think he stepped up to the plate and he started to look consistent after that. We talk about the final drive of the game. The Bucs are trailing by two. There's, I think, a minute 45 left to go in the game. You're basically running the two-minute drill. Got a good opportunity to do that. And I don't want to say he looked comfortable, because I will agree that some of his mechanics look not as quick as they should be, but he didn't look out of place, and he certainly looked like he knew how to help drive the ball down the field. Those tough conversions, the third and the fourth down.
That fourth down throw was really good.
That's huge. And, I mean, he really had to, you know, put some good placement on that ball. There was a defender, almost got a hand on it, barely out of reach, and he finds his receiver. But, again, that's just one of those things where, like, come that last drive, I was really rooting for him to get down the field, and as far as Jose Borregales, you know, it is what it is. It's preseason. The final score doesn't matter. But Kyle Trask certainly did his job when they needed him to.
Yeah. And I think if the score was different, they probably would have put Griffin in. Like, if the Dolphins were up like 14 points or 20 points or whatever, they probably would have put Griffin in. But I think they wanted to see if Trask could run the two-minute drill, and he did. That last throw to set up the field goal, I believe it was to Tompkins. That was a great throw. That was kind of, I think on the broadcast, they said it was almost like a slider, you know, in baseball. It was the way it moved. Pete in the chat says, has anyone ever seen Rhett and Trask in the same room at the same time? I have not. So you might have some questions to be answered, my friend.
I don't know. I plead the fifth.
No comment. Okay. No comment. That's all we got. So the world may never know if Rhett's, maybe that's why. Is that why we couldn't do a podcast last night? You were a little occupied.
Possibly. I don't know. I plead the fifth.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't have any answers for the questions you're asking me.
Okay. No, but I like a lot of my concerns with Trask are still there about the zip on the ball, about like overall like arm strength and being able to push the ball down the field. However,
I like that. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. You talk about pushing the ball down the field, and a play that might get swept under the rug was that incompletion to Scotty Miller down the sideline. I thought that was a pretty damn good throw.
I think he should have a little bit more on it. If he has a little bit more on it, it's a completion to me.
You feel like Scotty can kind of run away and get under it a little better.
Yeah, I feel like with a speedster like that, I would prefer to try and just throw it far and let him run under it. Yeah, let him try and catch it. Because I don't think there wasn't any safety over the top, so I think you could have thrown it a little bit. It wasn't a bad throw. It wasn't like egregious or anything, but I think it was a tad underthrown. But I mean, like as far as like he doesn't gun the ball, you know, you're not saying, oh, that thing was a bullet, you know. But like he looked better than he did last preseason, and like that's all you can ask for. And we talked about, well, maybe, you know, he's a better game time player than a practice player, and that could be very well the case, right? Like it could be. We'll see sort of what we from Tennessee.
We'll see in those
joint practices, because again, you're going to be going up against another defense. I think he got an interesting question in the press conference. I forget who it was from, but the question was if it was an advantage or a disadvantage to having those joint practices with the Dolphins. And I thought it was a valid question, because I think it could be both. It could be an advantage because you're seeing what that defense is, but it's also a disadvantage because they're seeing what you are. They're seeing where you like to go with the ball, how you throw the ball. Can you run? When are you going to run? So I thought Trask looked good. He needs to do it again. You know, this isn't just, oh, he's good. You know, okay, all right, phew. Right. Like, you know, he needs to do it again, especially since I think you're going to see a pretty similar quarterback setup next week that you did this week. Be Gabbert early, then 90% Trask, and maybe Griffin gets in a little bit. But the third preseason game, it sounds like a lot of the starters will play. So if Brady plays in that, he'll play two or three series. Gabbert will get two or three series, and then Trask may have like a quarter or so. So like he needs this next game versus Tennessee, to me, is a pretty big one for him, and he just needs to show that progress again.
Let's talk about the running backs here. Rashad White. And the sample size that everybody else had, everybody, the four running backs they carried out there, everybody had 7 carries at the least. Keyshawn Vaughn had the most with 10. Let's talk about Rashad White and his evening. 7 carries for 32 yards, didn't find the end zone. Also had a couple of catches on the night as well. But I will tell you, he was far and away the best looking back out there. He looked like a natural. I don't know if I'm overreacting. I probably am, considering he was playing second and third stringers, but he did look pretty damn good.
No, he did. And I mean, you know, I think they're going to bring him slowly along. I don't think they're going to rush him into anything. You know, that's why I still think, that like on third downs in a regular season, like it's going to be Leonard Fournette or Giovanni Bernard. Like, I don't think you're going to see, oh, Rashad White just right in there versus Dallas. I don't think you're going to see that. Obviously I know it's kind of a stale comparison now, because it seems like everybody's doing it, but like his run style is very similar to like a Le'Veon Bell. It's patient. You know, he finally runs like Alvin Kamara. Like, it's so funny to me watching Kamara, because it looks like Kamara's not running at all.
Yeah, it looks like he just is walking around out there.
Yeah, and like that's kind of like Rashad White. So like between the tackles and stuff, he looks a lot like Le'Veon Bell, waiting for stuff, being patient. That's a good and bad thing. You know, Le'Veon Bell was like one of the best ever at doing that, being that patient runner. There's some guys in the NFL that are patient runners, but doesn't really matter, because you got to still pick the right hole and have that vision and everything. So
there is such a thing as being too patient.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like shades of a Trent Richardson back in the day, like just, it wasn't
dude,
even
that
so
dude
much
might have the worst vision I've ever seen.
Right. It wasn't even so much that he was being patient. He just couldn't find the hole ever.
Yeah. That's unfortunate for him, but as a pass catcher, he looked like a natural. You can tell that he's obviously done it a lot. He feels comfortable doing it. And I do think you're going to see more and more of him. I think you'll see more of him versus Tennessee. He did look, not really saying much, because like the Bucs running back didn't have the best day, but he did look like, I think, the best running back out there. And for good reason. I think he's the one with, out of that room right there that they were playing with, he's the one with the most upside.
He's been described as athletic, you know what I mean? And so it was a nice sight for me to see him out there shoving off defenders. Like every now and again, he kind of sticks his arm out, shakes off a weak tackle. It wasn't abundant, but stuff like that kind of goes a long way in just how natural some of these guys look out there running the football. And yeah, I thought his mobility, I thought the way he just kind of waited around, not too long, but his style of play is encouraging. And I would say that going into this, everybody had high expectations for him. And he didn't blow the world off. He didn't blow the world up. Words are hard. He didn't blow the world up, but I thought he did look pretty good for a first preseason game. And I'm excited to see a bigger sample size for him going forward, because only 7 carries, I'm not going to say it's a crime, but tonight seemed like they wanted to get everybody in there into the rotation. Gio Bernard, 7 carries for him, 19 yards. Keyshawn Vaughn had 10 carries for 19. He also found the end zone. And then Kenyon Barner, 7 carries for 18 yards. Could have been like 7 carries for 30-something yards, but then had that holding call. I told you this before the show, but when Kenyon Barner broke off on that like huge 30-plus yard run, the first thing I thought about was how we were just roasting him on the preview show. Like, how the hell is this guy still on the team? And watch, he's going to put up 100 yards in the first preseason game, and I'm going to have to talk about it. But luckily, that wasn't the case. And here we are. Your thoughts overall on the running back room? Your boy Sneak, feel like he showed up? Or is that what you thought, huh? I knew you were pumped when he got in the end zone. You were the first person I thought of when he crossed the plane on a good drive from Kyle Trask.
Yeah, it was a good drive. That was probably their best drive of the night, honestly. But I didn't think the running backs were great. Both teams struggled to run the ball. I think this was definitely a game where both secondaries were kind of vulnerable at times, and both teams, you know, run defense was pretty good. So you can't really take away much. I'm not sure if you're going to see Fournette next week. I think you will see Fournette at some point this preseason. I don't know if it's going to be next week or not, but I would expect, I would think that you'd see less of Giovanni Bernard and more of Rashad White and Keyshawn Vaughn in the next preseason game. What Giovanni Bernard is. So.
I was surprised to see Gio get as many carries as he was. I was pleasantly surprised because I said on the preview show he may play, and you said, no, he's not going to play, and then he went out there and played. But yeah, 7 carries. I mean, I don't think he had to go out there and take that contact after the week he had against Miami, especially if he's still going to be above Rashad White on the depth chart come week one. But, oh well, who cares? He actually dealt with a minor injury, did he not? He was dealing with an ankle injury?
A little bit, yeah. He ended up being ruled out for the game. Him, Cam Gill, and Grant Stewart were the three players that got injured during the game. Don't really have any updates. It doesn't seem serious.
Right, so, at the end of the day,
it's more of a precautious thing than anything. It's just...
the end of the day, though, we can agree he probably didn't need to be out there.
No, I didn't even expect him to play. I said on the preview show I didn't think he was going to play. So I wouldn't play him next week.
Good news, though, for the people who paid the price of admission. I just thought this was funny and felt like it was worth bringing up. So Leonard Fournette, Lavonte David, guys like Julio Jones, they put their pads on before the game and they ran out of the tunnel with their pads on and they warmed up with their pads on. And then they took him off and their night was over. And I know that you would explain to me that, like, yeah, they just want to kind of get used to warming up in pads again because it is a much different experience when you've got an extra 20 pounds on your shoulders. But, like...
You have a full uniform on.
Just the idea that they get a full uniform on, go out there and go stretches, and then coach says, all right, your night's done. That was funny to me.
Hey, and you get paid for it, so.
Because the Bucs social media team had posted the locker room, and they posted the pads and the jersey of one Julio Jones, and a lot of people wanted to draw the conclusion that, like, okay, maybe he just gets a drive with Blaine. You know what I'm saying? And then you didn't see him at all. The snap count comes out. He plays 0% of the game. I don't know. I'm just nitpicking, but I thought it was a little funny.
Yeah, the Bucs release a list of players who aren't playing at all before the game, so... you know, if you guys are confused, just probably it's kind of like an inactive list, like an hour or so before the game. Most of the Bucs starters were on there. So, yeah, preseason football.
While we are talking about the offense, though, let's take a look at this left guard spot and the center position. It's funny because I know this has been said on other podcasts, but when you talk about evaluating an offensive lineman in particular, it's not as easy to do as like a quarterback or maybe a running back you're looking at, because if you're trying to get a good look at the game, it can be tough to watch the trenches for one player in particular for a set series of plays. Like, that's what's going back and watching the game again is for. That's what film is for. But as far as the offensive line and the left guard spot, I know we talked a whole lot about Aaron Stinney coming into this one, but I think Nick Leverett ultimately got the upper hand, because the starting lineup, if I remember correctly, was Stinney at right guard. Because, you know, no Shaq Mason out there, which is fine. First, Stinney plugged and played during the 2020 Super Bowl run. And then you had Nick Leverett at left guard. And then you had the holding call on Aaron Stinney. And I really, really kind of think that hurt his chances, because more and more people are talking about this Bucs coaching staff kind of being high on Nick Leverett and letting him get his feet wet a little bit more. But I don't know. What do you think of this? Robert Hainsey, not a whole lot to say. You know, had a couple of good blocks that I can remember. But if you don't hear their names called, you tend to assume that they're having a good night. And that's where I assume Aaron Stinney might be one of the more disappointing players coming out of this one.
Yeah, I haven't been able yet to watch the film on it, but first impressions, I was watching Stinney and Leverett pretty close. I wasn't impressed with either one. I didn't think either one was very good. Stinney missed a block on, I believe, the opening drive, the screen pass to Giovanni Bernard. Stinney missed a block. Then later on, this was Trask. Hand the ball to Keyshawn Vaughn, and Keyshawn Vaughn got hit immediately. Nick Leverett let the guy just right in the middle and kind of looked like confused. I wasn't overly impressed with either one. Luke Getteke was pretty quiet to me, so I guess you could say he had the best day out of the three. But yeah, both of those guys I think need to pick it up a little bit more. And you know, like I said, I haven't watched the film, just from the broadcast, what it looked like to me on the broadcast, I wasn't overly impressed with either one. But it's, you know, still early, so it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, you got a lot of time to figure out what's going to happen with this position battle. But I think the way that they roll out the starters next week isn't too important. But ultimately, I think who's playing left guard with Tom Brady in that third preseason game is gonna be pretty. I feel like by the time that rolls around, they should probably have this battle wrapped up, because you're gonna see Hainsey out there with the ones. That seems like a given. But as of right now, if I had to rank them, I think it would go Leverett as far as the left guard spot goes. I hate to say this, but I would say it probably goes Leverett, Getteke, Aaron Stinney, because again, when you highlight yourself with a penalty, it hurts. Like, it hurts the team. And like, yeah, there's missed blocks, and going back and looking again is what film is for. But this is just how I feel. And I know those are all Stinney obviously subject to change, because just like all the battles we're talking about today, there's a lot of ground to cover, a lot more time to figure this stuff out.
Stinney's also the most experienced one though. So I think that gives him points as well. I think they may like trust him the most. I mean, they trust him enough to plug him in the Super Bowl run. So they clearly trust him somewhat. I don't know if I'd put Getteke ahead of him. I still wouldn't put Leverett ahead of him. I still think Stinney's probably the front runner for that job, but just wasn't.
Yeah, on second thought, I probably wouldn't put Getteke ahead of him either. Let me take that back.
Just wasn't impressed with them. And it's like, it's fine. Just it's one preseason game, but I'm sure they're going to look at the film and they'll try to correct it. So
let's take a look at the other side of the football here. The defense, what did you see from this unit? What did you see from the guys who were out there in the secondary in particular, and any other comments or notes that you may have?
Well, the secondary was pretty disappointing to me. Kyler McMichael wasn't that great. I believe he had the one play in the end zone that he broke up, forced a field goal. Zion McCollum, rookie mistake on that one touchdown. He just kind of got burned there, a little blown coverage. He's a raw player. We talked about this, right? We've talked about this. He is a very raw player, and I think he will get better over time, but it was a rough showing for him. Other than that, a lot of guys were pretty quiet. Nolan Turner, pretty quiet. Like I said, Chris Cooper, pretty quiet from the safety position. I think Rashard Robinson, he was playing corner as well. He made a few plays. But yeah, overall, the secondary now, I mean, obviously, Carlton Davis, Sean Murphy Bunting, Jamel Dean didn't play. Ross Cockrell got beat on one route. I think it was a third down. He's been having a pretty good camp, but obviously disappointing to see that, especially when he's likely to be their fourth corner. As far as the secondary goes, pretty quiet. Don Gardner almost got an interception. It was a close play. Actually, the one you want to talk about, the Miami quarterback now, the one like ill advised throw that he had was that one that was almost an interception to Gardner. He wasn't able to get 2 feet down. But I was impressed with the defensive line. As far as pressure goes, later on in the game, they didn't get too much. But Anthony Nelson and Cam Gill, I see him mentioned in the chat here, especially Anthony Nelson. He was pretty impressive to me. Made a tackle for a loss for about 3 yards, and about two plays later had a sack for like a loss of 10 yards. So if he can keep improving, and he's a guy that's, to me, he's improved a little bit every year. I still don't know if I believe in his pure like pass rush ability as that third edge rusher. But I mean, if he can keep the steady improvement, it's hard not to see him get a shot. And maybe what if he goes out in Tennessee and does it again, right? Does that give the Bucs pause to adding a veteran pass rusher? Do they not have to add a resource there? Because they have limited resources at this point. Do they not have to maybe add a resource there? Maybe they need a backup offensive tackle and you can add a resource there or something. I was pretty encouraged by Nelson.
I don't want to say it's a weird evaluation, but when I think of Anthony Nelson on like a tier list of players, I would say he's like an upper echelon preseason kind of guy.
Yeah, he's
you know what I'm saying?
He's too good for the preseason.
Right. Like Pat O'Connor had a sack late in the game the other night, and I was thinking the same thing. I think Rondae Barber said it, but like I was surprised that Pat O'Connor was still on the field. Not to say that he doesn't need the reps, but you know, it's one of those names where it's like when they make a big splash play in the preseason, you're like, well, yeah, it's kind of what that guy does. And I'm sure it is encouraging to think of Anthony Nelson in that light, because a year ago, I probably didn't think of him in that way. But I'm curious to see what he does throughout the rest of the preseason. But once the regular season does roll around, you kind of hope that you're not in a position where you roll him out there and he's just not effective. And then you spend half of the year thinking, man, we really could have signed just another veteran edge rusher to kind of take the load off. And that would have helped out a lot.
Yeah, and another edge rusher that I think could impact things is Cam Gill. I thought he looked good as well. I thought he looked good. He's another player who they've kind of slowly brought along. So I was encouraged by what I saw from him. And then obviously we have to mention the leading tackler on the defense from last night. This is going to be an interesting name here. So are you ready? Here I go trying to say this name. So it is Alakunle Fatus Fatakas. I don't know.
Sound like you're insulting me.
Fatakasi. Well,
what did you just call me?
Anyways, he led the team with 6 tackles. He's an inside linebacker. He's an undrafted free agent. So he looked good. He looked really good. He almost had an interception. He was all over the place. So this team, they didn't bring back Kevin Minter. Grant Stewart, I think at this point, is like a pure just special teams guy. Like, I don't think he can play like actual linebacker.
Yeah, I don't think there's any crazy aspirations.
KJ Brith looked good, but like, you know, they need some inside linebacker depth, and Fatuski or whatever his name is. I don't know what I'm going to call him. I got to come up with a nickname for this guy.
Fatakasi?
Fatakasi, yeah, I guess. It's like fat and then UKASI.
The Fat Kamikaze.
There you go.
That's his code name.
Yeah, sure. But
it'll help you remember it, won't it?
I guess, but someone helped me say it. Like, I don't have trouble remembering it. I remember that I can't say it. I was surprised by what I saw from him. He could be a pleasant surprise to make this roster if he keeps that up. He was all over the place in the third and fourth quarter on Saturday night. So if he keeps that up, they don't really have much depth on inside linebacker. He could very well earn himself a roster spot.
You'd love to see it. This is the time of year where guys like that go out there and make a name for themselves, not only for the team that they are representing, but the rest of the NFL. Because if he doesn't end up on the roster and you put up some good tape, you know how the game goes. Other teams are going to take a look at you. And at the end of the day, for that individual player, that's going to mean success. And you love success stories nowadays. But I think we've pretty much covered the wagon from last night's preseason game. I mean, it doesn't feel like there's a whole lot more to go super in-depth with. Most of the main position battles we covered, and most of the starters, like the guys who are going to be playing week one and affecting the game, well, point blank, you just didn't see a whole lot out of them. So yes, we still have the rest of the preseason.
TV12 Goatman brings up in the chat, the Bucs do have to cut their roster down after this game from 90 to 85 players. So that's 5 players that must be cut. I don't know who they're going to be. We'll see. I'm sure it'll probably be at some positions where they have a lot of depth. So maybe a wide receiver goes, maybe a tight end goes, maybe an offensive lineman goes. I don't know. We'll see, but they will have some cuts coming soon. It won't be any notable names, I don't think. Like, it won't be any, like, whoa, that's a surprise. Like, those come in the final cuts, which won't be until after the Tennessee game. But they do need to make some cuts. And overall, though, you know, you think there's obviously always some things you need to work on. There's some things everybody needs to get better at. But I think you're more encouraged if you're a believer in Kyle Trask and a believer in Tyler Johnson. You know, in a believer in Anthony Nelson and Cam Gill, like you're more encouraged after this game than anything. As we talked about, you know, there's some things you got to work on. That left guard spot, I wasn't impressed. You know, I think as far as the kicking battle, it's not over, but you know, it's I still think it's pretty even. Like, I don't think that kick really means a whole lot. It definitely is gonna impact some things for sure, but I don't think that one kick can erase everything else that he did in that game. So there's definitely a lot of progress, though, and more positive, I think, than negative. Obviously, it's a loss, whatever, who cares. But overall, I did come out of this game feeling better about guys like Kyle Trask, even Blaine Gabbert. Like,
yeah, you know,
you
yeah,
felt
no
better. You felt better about Blaine Gabbert than you did going into this game. So that's what the preseason's ultimately about. It doesn't matter about wins or losses. You're just hoping to feel better about the players that's on the team. And, you know, for the most part, I was pretty impressed, you know, with the progress of a lot of the younger players on the team. And that's, like I said, that's what preseason is for.
Joint practices coming up later this week with the Tennessee Titans. Of course, we will keep you guys updated along every step of the way. Any cuts that may be happening too, we'll be talking about the next time you hear from us. But with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, that's just about going to do it for this episode of the Cannon Fire Podcast. Thank you so much to everybody in our live audience who checked us out today live on YouTube. Kind of just jumped on here with no notice. That's kind of how we roll.
We had like 45 people in the live chat.
Yeah,
so
pushing 50, man. We really appreciate you guys. Our buddy Wild Bill checking in. Tom, TB12, Goatman, Kevin, Pete Payne, the moderators who held it down. We truly appreciate you guys. Wild Bill says, let's just say the missed kick doesn't mean anything, but it doesn't mean a whole lot in the grand scheme of things. Ari, any assessment? Would have been nice to win, but nice as all is, it's preseason. Like summer league, exactly. I mean, this is the G League of the NFL. You're getting a pretty good look at it. So let's get ready for joint practices this week. The first preseason game is in the books, and hopefully by the time week one rolls around, we are a hell of a lot better with the game reviews because, man, we were just kind of raw dogging this one.
It's preseason for everybody. All
right. I know. I promise you guys will be a little bit more organized in the future. We appreciate you checking out the show this week. Find us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All of those are Cannon Fire Podcast. Best place to go for updates on the show and, of course, Buccaneer news as it happens. Speaking of Bucs news as it happens, you can follow my co-host Evan on Instagram at Bucs_daily, the number one Buccaneers fan page on Instagram. You can also find him on Twitter at EvanNFL. And check out his written work at BucsNation.com. What you working on this week?
Actually, had something go up right about when we started the show. So if you go to BucksNation.com right now, you can read. I listed four or five standouts from the game last night, and I'm going to be doing that for every Bucks game. I'm going to, after the game, I'll list four or five players that stood out to me, talk about them a little bit. So go check that out on BucksNation.com. And like I said, should be up right now.
Last but not least, find myself on social media at Redicus, RHETTAKUS. If you follow me, I will follow you back. But that's the show, folks. Plenty of great things and some hopeful feelings after last night's preseason loss to Miami. And we are just as excited to get things rolling next week against Tennessee. The absence of Tom Brady is obviously going to be a big topic this week for most of the media outlets. But most level-headed people, you know the drill by now. We'll be fine. We'll talk to you soon. I'm your host, Rhett Matthews, signing off for my co-host, Evan Wanish. We'll talk to you next time. Until then, and as always, go Bucks.